Welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by SUNY Upstate Medical University, making the academic difference in healthcare in the Central New York community. And this is your host, Tricia Torrey, every patient's advocate. Well, as regular listeners know, we've been on a roll recently with great conversations about medical research taking place right here in Central New York. This morning, we're going to bring you more of that, but as usual, with a different kind of twist. In fact, this morning's conversation is going to give you some idea about how a young person's fascination with the world around him can grow into benefits for mankind. A powerful and feel-good story. In the studio with me this morning is Dr. Michael Zuber, assistant professor in ophthalmology at SUNY Upstate and adjunct assistant professor in biochemistry and molecular biology. That's a long title. Good morning, Dr. Zuber.
Good morning.
That's a lot to get our arms around, but what I was struck with by preparing for our conversation this morning is the life you've created for yourself in Syracuse. You started in a small town in Iowa. How did you get here?
Long road, I guess, in a long, long time. It all had to do with what I was interested in. I kind of followed what I was interested in, and that's how it led me here.
And let's speak about those interests, because this is a fascinating part of the story. When you were young, you enjoyed science.
That's right. I was a bit of a science geek kid, I guess, and very interested in developmental biology, because it really fascinated me that, you know, a single egg and a single sperm would make an, you know, not only an entire person, but an entire cow, and, you know, what are the mechanisms that allow those two very, very small things to give rise to something like a grand tree or something like that.
And so you started at this really young age with a fascination in cells.
That's right.
And that fascination took you to?
Well, first, after my undergraduate degree, I went to the University of Wisconsin to get a degree in biochemistry. I originally majored in biochemistry or biology and chemistry as an undergraduate. But then realized I wasn't quite interested in that, and I was more interested in the biology of chemistry, and so I got my degree in biochemistry. And then realized I wasn't interested in that as much.
You get bored easily?
Apparently.
Okay.
And so realized what I was really interested in was neural development and how the nervous system develops, because it is the most complex organ in the entire body.
Absolutely. I mean, you're talking about the brain, the spinal column. All of those. And if you don't have any of those, you don't have the body, do you?
That's exactly right.
Okay, so you went from Wisconsin to?
First, I went to San Diego. So after I got my PhD in Wisconsin, I took a job in a lab in San Diego, Bill Harris's lab at UC San Diego. And he was working on neural development. Again, this is getting back to my interest in neural development. And how the brain is patterned, how the different parts of the brain form from this, what initially is a uniformed type of cell. And about a year after I joined Bill's lab, he moved to Cambridge, England, and took the department chair in the anatomy department in Cambridge.
Ah, so he went to England.
That's right.
You followed him.
I did. I figured it'd be a good career move, and I was very interested in English and the English history, and really interested in what he was working on, so I decided to move with his lab.
You did. And then how long were you in England?
So I was there about 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And actually met my wife there. We were married in England. And
is she English?
She is not. No, she was a Californian.
There you were in California, but you had to go to England to meet her.
Exactly.
All right.
So I probably a five-hour drive from her in California, but I had to go to England to find her.
I see. All right. So while you were in England, though, you started to really develop almost a specialty area of your interest, didn't you?
That's right. So I started off being interested in neural development in general and how different parts of the nervous system develop. And then what I focused more on was specifically how the eye formed, because that is an outpocketing more or less of the brain itself.
All right. So eyes, and then eyes translated to frogs. And I promise listeners we're going to make this leap in a moment.
Seems like a difficult connection.
Yes, it does. But you came to Syracuse for frogs, didn't you?
That's right.
And so, speak to us how that happened.
So my boss who in San Diego and then Cambridge, so his lab work in frogs, and this particular type of frogs called Xenopus laevis, and they're fantastic to work with. They're very easy to work with, and that's the reason we work with them. But the reason I came to Syracuse was that I tried to look around to see a place that I could learn to do transgenic Xenopus.
Okay.
And maybe we can talk about that later.
But and I do want to talk about that because it's a big word, but it's a very interesting one.
That's right. And so I looked around the country, and it turned out that one of the best people to do that type of research, make transgenic frogs, is right here at SUNY Upstate.
At SUNY Upstate.
That's right.
In all of the world. And so you uprooted your family.
Mm-hmm.
You came to Syracuse, New York. How long have you been here now?
We've been here since probably about 6 years now, 5 or 6 years.
Five or six years, which means you've weathered our winters a couple of times.
We have.
And you're still staying here, and you like it here.
That's right. Yeah, we love it here, actually. Yeah.
You love it.
All the places I've lived, this is probably one of the most comfortable places I've ever lived.
And, you know, I love that you say that, because I, too, have lived all over the country, not all over the world. But I came back to Syracuse because I love it, too. But I didn't come back for frogs. So speak to me about these transgenic frogs.
So the reason we initially came here, now we should mention this is Barry Knox's laboratory here, was because one of the things we wanted to learn to do was make transgenic animals, because one of the things that we're very interested in doing is understanding how genes are expressed in different locations in the developing embryo, because that's very important in how the embryo actually develops and how the eye develops.
But speak to me about what transgenic means.
Exactly. So transgenic simply means adding another gene to an animal that did not have or previously have that gene.
Transferring a gene.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. And so you're using them now with eyes?
That's right.
So what do you do with these frogs?
So with the frogs, what we're doing is we've found a way to, what we're interested in is early retinal development. And retina is just the part of the eye that is in the back of your eye. And that's those are the cells that receive the light signal and allow you to see. And then they send that signal back to your brain.
I see.
So we're interested in figuring out how those cells form, how those cells develop. And frogs are an excellent system for doing that because, first of all, you can get thousands of eggs from an individual frog and to do experiments with. We can overexpress genes. We can inhibit the expression of genes.
And what does overexpress mean?
So, for instance, if you have a gene that expresses 5 units, you know, per cell, you can make it express more of that to see what effect that might have.
And what kinds of effects would that have?
It depends on the gene. So there are some genes, the genes that we work in, for instance, if we take 7 of these genes and we overexpress them in a frog embryo, we can get an eye to form someplace that it would not normally form.
Like on a leg?
Like on the side of the embryo or on the back of the embryo.
Really?
But the purpose of this was to try to identify the set of genes that could convert any cell into a retinal cell.
Any cell at all?
Any cell at all.
All right. Does this translate to, we hear talk about stem cells.
That's right.
Okay. These are not the stem cells that are controversial that people worry about.
No. So we don't work with mammals at this point.
Okay.
What we're working on, and the advantage of working in frog is that you can do things much, much more quickly than you can in a mammal. So for example, the formation of the frog eye takes from the time that the embryo is fertilized to the time that you actually have a functioning eye the animal can use takes just 3 days.
Oh, you're kidding.
Okay.
It sounds like I remember learning about fruit flies that they would regenerate really quickly.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, that's why we use model systems, right? It's because they have advantages and we can do things much more quickly. So in the work that we do, we're able to much more quickly identify genes that are involved in this process. And that could then, in fact, translate into humans because there is genetically a lot of similarities between these lower vertebrates and humans.
You play with all of that, but are you looking then, what, for combinations that can eventually help human disease?
That's right. So we have very specific questions.
I see.
It sounds like we're playing, but we're really working hard.
I know you are.
The goal of the research that we're doing is to find a way to convert cells like pluripotent cells that have not yet decided what they're going to be.
Mm-hmm.
They could become a heart cell, they could become a leg cell, they could become an eye cell, and tell those cells, give those cells the genes that they need to specifically become eye cells, so that if we could do that in mammalian cells, you could then find a way, therefore, to generate these retinal stem cells, and heal the damaged retina.
And a damaged retina, and what would we hear that in terms of? We know disease names. Would that be like
macular degeneration?
What kinds of diseases would you be then looking to cure?
So there are different types of maladies for the eye. Okay, there are some like nearsightedness and farsightedness that have to do more with the shape of the eye, but don't have anything to do with actually the cells in the eye. And then there are other diseases like glaucoma, macular degeneration, and these other diseases that actually occur because the cells within the retina actually die. And so what we're trying to do is find a way to replace those cells.
Very interesting. You know, recently we've been doing a lot of talk about organ donation. It almost sounds like you wouldn't need to transplant an eye, for instance, if you had that kind of capability to transfer the right cells.
Potentially, yeah. So there's some things that's happened in the last year and a half that make this whole field very exciting. And one of those is that it's been discovered that you can take a skin cell from a patient and reprogram that cell to have it become more like a retinal stem cell.
Oh, my gosh. Oh,
sorry, excuse me, more like a stem cell.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and those are called induced pluripotent cells.
So oh, that's a big word. And you know what? We'll make sure we put that on our website so people can look at it and really get their arms around it.
And there are people who have been able to isolate late, what they call late progenitors, late rod cells, for example. Rods are one type of cell type in your retina that is often damaged in retinal diseases. And put those in a mouse and show that the mice could then see again. Okay, but there's this gap. There's this gap between these pluripotent cells and these late rod progenitors. And that's the gap that we're trying to fill. We're trying to find a way to take those pluripotent cells, make them late rod progenitors in the frog,
mm-hmm.
and then try to pattern that back into the mammalian retina.
And how long does it take? I mean, just a general, you're doing this now. When will people actually benefit from this kind of research?
It's a very difficult thing to say, but already, like I said, in mammals, in mice, we've been able to take late rod progenitors, put them in the mouse, and show that the mouse can mouse's vision is partially healed. The stem cell stuff part of it's already been done. It's being done right now. The part in between that we're working on, I would be surprised if it was much more than, it's difficult to say. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's
but are we talking 2 years, or are we talking 20 years?
I think we're talking more like 20 years.
Very, very interesting. What do you hope in the future when you retire? And you're a young man, so we're talking maybe 30 or 40 years down the road. What do you think is going to happen? Where will people be with these kinds of this kind of research?
My hope, my vision,
so to speak,
is that by the time I retire, we will have an idea of how to convert these pluripotent stem cells, cells that would become any type of cell in the body, into retinal stem cells that then could be pushed towards these late progenitors and put back into a patient's eye. That's my goal. That's our hope in my laboratory.
Which means that our children or our grandchildren will benefit.
I hope so.
Very good. Well, Dr. Michael Zuber, this has been a fascinating conversation. We're so happy you're right here in Syracuse at SUNY Upstate doing this kind of research. We thank you for coming by this morning.
Thank you very much.
And listeners, we need to take a break. We'll be back in just a few moments, so please stay with us. This is SUNY Upstate's HealthLink on Air on 570 WSYR.